Tim Rollins and his group of Hispanic teenage students from the South Bronx make up one of the hottest art collaboratives around. The group goes by the name of KOS, Kids of Survival. Their work has been shown at galleries and museums in New York and Europe. Roberta Smith wrote in the New York Times that these students are producing artwork of a remarkable sophistication, which refuses to conform to known categories, but alternates between the literary and the visual, the modern and the naive. My guests are Tim Rollins and Carlos Rivera, one of the founding members of KOS. The DIA Art Foundation in New York is currently showing Tim Rollins and KOS's America paintings. The images are inspired by Franz Kafka's uncompleted novel, America. The group painted directly onto the pages of the book, which were mounted on linen. This technique dates back to when Rollins formed the group in 1982. He was a special ed art teacher trying to find inspiration for his learning disabled students. Frustrated with the watered-down text his students were using, Rollins began to read to them from his own copies of unabridged classics.
Instead of the kids just, you know, staring at me or blanking out, I asked the kids to draw. And with number two drawing pencils, I'd have the kids draw not what I was reading. In other words, I didn't want them to illustrate it. I wanted them to draw what I was reading reminded them of in their everyday lives in the Bronx, whatever came into their mind. And so we produced tons and tons of drawings out of this. And I didn't really know what to do with them. In the very early works, we would do some like collaborative paintings, but Adalberto would have a corner here and Wanda would have a corner here. It wasn't all pulled together until one day, Carlito was in the class, and I think he's 11, 12 at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just been in there. And I was reading from, I believe it's George Orwell's 1984. And I had the school really didn't provide paperback copies of that book. So I had got some of my own, and I had one that I loved to read from. It was a first edition, because I collect books. And it was in that first edition. I don't know, Carlos got it mixed up somehow, but he started, instead of drawing on paper what I was reading about, he started drawing on the book. In the book, in the pages themselves. I don't even remember what the image was. But at first, you know, I really wanted to kill him. I go, what are you doing? You know, this kind of frustration. And it wasn't the kid's fault. It's just, you know, he just didn't understand what was going on. But what was really amazing is that Carlito really couldn't even read the word "the" at that time. But he, through my reading of the Orwell, he had come up with this kind of incredible image. He had completely assimilated the content of this book and understood it completely without being able to read it himself. And, you know, something was there. And I wasn't sure what it was. It's one of those things that, you know, bugs you for months and months and months, but there was something there in the levels of, you have the text and then you have an image on top of the text. And what it was, in a way, it deconstructed the text. In a way, it was like two layers of history. One, which is from a canon that was either denied or made useless to us. And the second layer, which is our drawing, is a reinterpretation of these classic texts in our own language, a language that we had a command of, a language of images.
Carlos, why did you, on that day, draw in Tim's copy of the book?
I decided to draw on the book because I thought it was more interesting instead of, you know, working on a piece of blank paper. I thought it was interesting working on top of words that I couldn't not read.
Mm-hmm. Tim, tell me how things work now when you're beginning to do a painting. Are you still reading out loud from a book?
Yeah, it comes to that. For example, in our new cycle of works, The Temptation of St. Anthony, which we're preparing for a major show in 1990 at the Kunstmuseum in Basel, the beginning of that also came with Carlos Rivera here. When he was 11 years old, I had a stack of art books. And I told him, go through this and pull out, you know, what you think, what's the most interesting thing here. And it was all, you know, it was like from the world history of art. And he said, well, I don't like any of it except for this one thing. And he pulls out a copy of Grunewald's medieval masterpiece, the Eisenheim altarpiece. And in that altarpiece, there's a panel with monsters, and it's based on the story of The Temptation of St. Anthony. So my first assignment to Carlos was to copy at an exact size with acrylic on a wood panel, just the way Grunewald did it, except he didn't use acrylic, but on a wood panel, copy it just exactly. After a week, Carlos had done exactly that. I mean, it was phenomenal. So I was particularly in love with Odilon Redon's lithographs of those that he did as illustrations for the text by Gustave Flaubert. So I started reading the text, The Temptation of St. Anthony by Gustave Flaubert, and my mind was blown. I thought this was a terrific, terrific book. So I started looking at sections of it that I thought the kids would really get into and started reading that to them. And then the kids go, yeah, it's really interesting, and let's think about it. Year goes by, 2 years go by. It's always in the back of my minds, in the back of the kids' minds. Then they start developing even more and more, and we went to Madrid and saw the Bosch painting. We went to the Museum of Modern Art study library and handled, you know, the entire cycle by Redon. We really started looking at what we could do with these things. And then we started inventing these new ways of painting with the watercolors by chance operations and colored powders and pigments. And then we started buying lab equipment and painting with things like little surgical spoons and syringes, really kind of creepy mad scientist gear all over the place. And it started. And what we came up with, which is still in development now, is this kind of amazing new way of making these paintings. And they're absolutely, they're demonic. They look biological or organic. They're hideous and fascinatingly beautiful and elegant at the same time, capturing perfectly the spirit of the Flaubert, but really pulling it into something that's a little more modern. They look like strange, deadly alien viruses.
This sounds really interesting. It seems to me that you are very conscious that you don't want the work of Tim Rollins and KOS to be seen as an extension of graffiti or hip-hop culture.
No, because it definitely comes from that. We all come from that. The kids, that's their, in a way, their artistic tradition was based in graffiti and comic books. That's the same, you know, before I knew anything about Western art history, I was into the X-Men. As a working class kid growing up in rural Maine, that's how I learned to read.
Those were comics. And write.
Yeah, comics, Marvel Comics, X-Men, yeah. Teenage Mutants.
Right.
And popular culture is really where our hearts lie. But we also didn't want to be trapped in that very narrow category of graffiti or hip-hop. It was very narrow, and it's something. How do I put it? That was the work that everyone expected us to do.
Carlos, yeah. I was wondering if you feel that way about it, too. I'm sure you have had friends who were graffiti artists or, you know, older brothers of friends.
Yeah. Well, me, myself, I love, like, drawing my name and making it into graffiti and stuff like that. And I was one time in Spain, and I was in a show of ours that we had in La Máscara Española. And this man comes up to me. He goes, "Excuse me, but where is your graffiti art? I don't see any art graffiti here." And I say, I told him, "Well, we're not joint art. I mean, we're not joint graffiti. We are. This is the art that we make." And then he said, "Yeah, but I expect there's some kind of names and b-boy and guns and stuff like that." And he was like, surprised that us South Bronx kids and Tim Rollins may collaborate into one and make these incredible pieces and beautiful at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Are there rules that students have to follow in order to stay with KOS?
Yes.
What are they?
Very strict rules. Well, first of all, you must be in school, or you must be in a GED program if you can't handle school. You cannot be a dropout and be part of KOS. I don't go for that. Another thing is that I'm not at all interested in the kids being involved in drugs, so that's out. And I'm not interested in them being teenage mothers or fathers. That's out. And so, because I'm not into supporting that sort of self-destructive behavior, that's all there is to it. So those are the basic outlines. And also, everyone has to have a modicum of respect for each other and not steal from the workshop. I mean, just basic, you know, ground rules of behavior that help us do the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Carlos, you are now going to the High School of Art and Design in New York, right?
No.
Okay.
Well, I used to go there, but I was there for 3 years. And my teacher told Tim on the phone that there's no way I could get my diploma because of my reading level. And my teacher decided something with him and decided that if I'm going to be going to school and I don't even get to pass ninth grade, that the best thing for me to do is to be more involved in KOS and work there full-time and stuff like that while I work with my GD or something.
Right. So what we're doing is it's a situation in which Carlos and the school just didn't mix. And he was suffering the same things that he had suffered when I first met him in junior high school, avoiding school to avoid the pain of, you know, going through this. Art and Design is a wonderful school, but as we all know, the public schools' resources are severely, severely limited. So if a kid has a very severe learning problem, it's almost impossible to really get that kind of care and attention that is necessary. So his counselor said, well, you know, the best thing he could do is to work with you for full time and get him a private tutor for the reading and stuff. So that's our approach and that's what we're doing. So mm-hmm. It isn't like he's a high school dropout. It's that he had to exchange that learning situation for an alternative one, and it's been working really well, mm-hmm. really well.
Tim, what's the highest you've gotten for a painting?
The highest that we've gotten directly from the studio through our dealer, it's $100,000.
How's the money divided? Can I ask that?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, with the commercial gallery, they get 50%. That's the standard thing. And so the other money goes straight into the Art and Knowledge Workshop account, and from that, the kids all get paid salaries. I get paid a salary, pays for the trips that we take, all the expenses of the workshop, and also goes into acquiring works of art. We're starting a nice little collection of kind of artists from history that the kids like James Enzor prints and a Goya print we have, and Philip Guston. And then we also have money to support young artists that really need support at that point. And so we acquire work by younger artists like Felix Gonzalez Torres and Daryl Ellis and Lorna Simpson. And so in that way, the wealth is spread as good as possible. But we're a nonprofit corporation.
Mm-hmm. What happens when someone's all grown up? I don't know if you've encountered this yet, but is there an age when you think someone ought to leave?
Oh, well, that's the point. It's not like Menudo, you know, where you get kicked out at puberty. But it's not like that. What I've always said, and in the case of all the kids, our oldest now is Jose Parisi. And he's 21. In some cases, too, Jose Parisi, I kicked him out for a year because it seemed like he was taking advantage of the workshop and using it as a crutch, using it as a nest, and not really using the opportunities that had been presented to him in a productive way. And I said, if you get it together and go to college and let me see what you do on your own and really grow up in a year, I'll give you 1 year, come back and we'll see how it works. And that's exactly what he did, and that worked very successfully. It was very painful for me, but it was really the right thing to do, and for the workshop, for myself, and I think especially for Jose.
Listen, I thank you both for talking with us.
Great.
Thanks.
Thanks.